Hey, y'all. Welcome back to the Brianna Approved podcast. Today, we have a special guest. We have Brendan Vermeyer, who is a mental and metabolic health scientist, researcher, functional medicine educator, writer, and speaker. He does a lot, y'all. He is a board-certified holistic health practitioner, a master nutrition coach, master personal trainer, USA weightlifting sports performance coach, and a CrossFit trainer. So he's obviously in shape, living the life, drinking the juice. And he's also the owner and founder of Metabolic Solutions Institute for Functional Health and Fitness Practitioners. And he's created the Functional Mental Health Practitioner Certificate course. And I'm also so excited to learn more about your creation of the MAP Cutting Edge Lab Panel for Mental Health. So Brendan, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Dr. Brianna, my friend.
Yes. For those of you who don't know, Brendan and I go back to the FDN days. I think you were an advisor of mine, or I don't even remember, but FDN is still one of the people that I feel like the networking that they have after the program ends. And I just think it's so credible and people really respect it. And you were definitely ahead of your time for being a part of that. So it's cool to just sort of see the evolution of what you've done now and creating your own functional labs and all of that.
Well, thank you. Yeah, no, honestly, I feel like it really was through the FDN community and program. I feel like all my best connections and friendships, and it got me into the industry more. And that still remains, you know, a community near and dear to my heart. But I've had the pleasure of connecting with so many amazing individuals like yourself. And it's honestly, it's kind of crazy. You know, it's like when you're in high school, you're like a freshman and you're a guppy. And then when you're like a senior and we're like, we're seniors, we're awesome. That's how I feel now of like some of these OG FDNs. Like we were some of the like yes. kind of originals when FDN was really sort of taking off and gaining more reputability. And so there's those of us that, you know, are now like established in our fields, and we kind of have that common lineage, which is just really cool and full circle.
No, it's really amazing. And I think what's so great, what FDN does a good job of, but what I think is so interesting about you is you have this really beautiful dichotomy of mixing science and mechanisms and physiology, which is great. But then you also will interpose in mindset and sort of the difference between brain health and mind health. And I think that that's such an important line to discern. And a lot of people will kind of clump them together. So I would love to kind of just hear you in general, just talk about how you've just sort of seen the functional medicine world evolve, like what that definition of functional health even means to you now, because there's a lot of buzz around it. And maybe just, yeah, sort of how you separate out, you know, brain health versus, you know, mind health, and just fill us in on what's been going on, because you've been doing this for a while. So you're yeah. definitely an expert in the field.
Well, I really appreciate that. And it takes, I try to be careful with my words because, you know, people can get offended very easily these days, but I do think it takes a special person to recognize what you're acknowledging here. So that's very complimentary to me because, like, obviously as whatever I am, you know, I don't really identify too hard with any individual credential or thing. I'm very fluid in my sort of sense of self. But what you just said, it is a very accurate perception of the vibe that I'm going for and what I'm trying to accomplish. And to your point, I have this very sort of eclectic background of, you know, my background's nutrition, fitness, metabolic physiology, and performance, and taking a very science objective-based approach, right? The beginning of my career was personal training, nutrition coaching, health coaching, and using, you know, blood work primarily as an objective means to measure progress, body fat percentage, VO2, resting metabolic rate. And so from the very beginning of my career, 17, 18, I had this very, you know, objective science physiology approach to health coaching and the healing journey. And I'll admit, like, taking people through a workout or teaching them how to build a healthy plate of food and teaching them healthy nutritional behaviors, that doesn't light me up. You know, it feels a little mind numbing, to be honest. Don't get me wrong. It's rewarding to have that one-on-one, but I really liked the science of it. I wanted to be the guy that could go deeper. And so that's what segued me into functional medicine. Of course, then I have my really tragic, long, sad story, right? You know, we all have our story, and I have one, and it's very tragic, to be honest. But that's really what propelled me into root cause medicine in general. And, you know, because I went through the FDN program to then get into the greater functional medicine space, FDN was a big turning point in my career because it brought together so many good things for me. You know, before FDN, you know, I had done some specialized training through like Ben Lynch on methylation and nutrigenomics, like very technical biochemical stuff, right? Or like Jay Tita was a big mentor figure for me because he was combining a lot of like metabolic fitness nutrition concepts with naturopathic medicine concepts. Mm-hmm. But FDN was kind of the first time that I felt like it was all coming together into sort of one methodology and one way of thinking that really resonated with me. And I kind of falsely assumed, as then I started making my rounds through the functional medicine space, I sort of falsely assumed that we all think that way. We're all on the same page with this very holistic, dynamic way of thinking. And I very quickly recognized, oh my gosh, actually, there's so much going on here. It's chaos. It's unregulated. There's really no standard of functional medicine. It's more of a construct than it is like a legally regulated methodology, right? Mm-hmm. And then times are changing so fast and science is evolving so fast. And it took me a number of years, but as you're, you know, pointing out, I have found my voice. I have found my lane. I have found, you know, my branding and my methodology. And so I really did create my own whole methodology and brand with, you know, the FMHB certificate program, a specific type of methodology that's root cause medicine for mental health and metabolic dysfunction, you know, the mental map panel. Because even within this sort of expanding functional medicine, holistic health, it's almost expanding like too rapidly, where now it's like, what's true, what's not true, what's evidence-based, what's not. And so I very clearly saw like, I have an opportunity that I need to create this thing. And to your point, you know, my whole career now really centers around this sort of mental metabolic tandem. But also with mental, and I kind of have stopped using it, but like my brain yin yang logo that, you know, it's very out there, used to be on every Instagram post. And, you know, I have tank tops and t-shirts that still have that. But to me, that logo of the brain yin yang really symbolized, you know, the physiological aspect of mental health dysfunction and the psychological. And I do think what makes mental health and navigating mental health dysfunction so, you know, cryptic and nebulous and ambiguous is we do kind of have to delineate as much as possible between the sort of subjective psycho-emotional experience versus the objective physiological, you know, undertones. And that's not an easy thing to do because when you're experiencing mental health issues, all you know is you don't feel good. You know, you're having physical symptoms, you're having emotional symptoms, and it's all just mixed together within your psycho physiological milieu. So I'm trying, and that's why I do what I do, but I'm trying to create a system, a methodology, and develop practitioners that can, you know, take those people that are so lost within themselves and their struggles and their ailments, and creating a structure that allows us to work through this methodically. So we get all types of practitioners, but to wrap this up, and kickstart the convo, like I'm getting a lot of therapists into my program, which is cool. Now, on the one hand, because they don't have as much of like the physiological biochemical education, that is kind of overwhelming for them. But it's beautiful because they've been trained in psychoemotional behavioral, you know, psychology and how to, you know, treat that from a clinical psychology perspective. So then to give them the physiological side is really powerful, as opposed to somebody that they have the physiological, but they don't really understand the behavioral and, you know, getting into topics like neuroplasticity of how do we harness neuroplasticity to create those neural networks, to create the behaviors that then ultimately change the physiology. So I really appreciate that question because it's a great prompt for what's a really huge subject that needs more attention and help than ever before. And the demand is just growing faster than we can keep up with.
I think it's such an interesting time that we're in now because there's so many benefits, but there's so many detriments because everybody wants to be a specialist in XYZ. And then there's this sub-specialized coach for every single thing now. And then there's a test. And it's like, depending on where you fall on the spectrum, you're not going to be an expert in every single thing. And a lot of people don't want to admit that. And so I think there's this balance of being myopic of let's test, don't guess and all that. And it's a great jumping off point. But sometimes you have to meet people where they are and they're much, much more out there in that 30,000 foot view. And I think you actually just did a post about this idea of like overcomplicating healing and how that actually is a form of self-sabotage. And people, I think, walk this line of creating this identity around I am this person, or even from a practitioner standpoint. I know when I started in my career, I came out the gate real hard being like only science because I always felt like my age was working against me and I had to be, you know, using all the correct vernacular and all of that. And then you meet some people and to your point, they want to just talk about nutrition. And I'm like, this is kind of boring. It doesn't excite me. I don't love it. But you have some people who need that and they need to understand mechanism of action. And then you have some people who are like, let's talk about the woo-woo, what the liver means in Chinese medicine and all of that. So it's like, how do you find you balance kind of that as a either, you know, just a person yourself, you know, you're dealing with your own, you know, balancing life, but also as a business person and a practitioner and like, you know, where do you kind of find that balance on a day-to-day basis?
That's a really good question. Honestly, I'm in a really interesting sort of state in my career where I have a lot of things going on. And there's a big difference between, okay, like as a Instagram content creator, just putting out good content into the world for people to consume and criticize and whatever. That's a very different thing than like my day job or my vision or the long haul of what I want to accomplish. And right now I'm in a position where it's like, I'm very spread thin and I have a lot of, you know, kind of irons in the fire. And it's almost like how attached to some of the visions am I, you know, there's a practicality there, for example, to be less, you know, nebulous, with like private clients, this is where I'm probably the most stuck and conflicted because I've put so much time and energy into trying to create like this perfect client service experience and methodology. But part of it is, you know, consumer behavior is changing, consumer education levels are changing, the information overload and the overcomplicating. And so there's what I'm trying to put out there and what I'm trying to attract and what I'm trying to accomplish versus what I get, right? Mm-hmm. I have no control over how people receive my content or messaging or how they interpret it. And unfortunately, like with private clients, I'm getting to this point and to your point about that post of, you know, I'm postulating overcomplicating healing, I believe is very much like a subconscious mm-hmm. form of self-sabotage. And I don't think people recognize that. You know, because it's subconscious. You're not aware of something that's subconscious until it's reflected back to you and you sit with it and you explore it. But certainly there's so much conditioning, you know, pill for the ill and what's the silver bullet. Because unfortunately, like with my practice, I get a lot of people that have a lot going on. They're freaked out. They're tired. They're symptomatic. They're spread thin. They've already worked with 10 other providers. They've done all the things. And they're highly curious of like, well, I want to do the test because I want to find the specific root cause so I can throw a silver bullet pill protocol at it. Poof, makes it all go away. I don't have to face myself. I don't have to dig into anything uncomfortable. I don't have to sit with anything that threatens my sense of identity. I don't really have to do the redundant, boring, not mm-hmm. sexy lifestyle foundations. Mm-hmm. Just poof, it's, and we know it doesn't work that way, right? And so it's weird how, in a lot of ways, I feel like, okay, if really helping an individual in a one-on-one client service setting, if that really was my top priority in life, I almost feel like I need to revert back to the beginning of my career of like, all right, let's do a basic blood panel. That's like $50, $100. We don't need to do $1,000 or $2,000 of comprehensive analysis. Let's get your body fat. Let's get your RMR, your VO2, some basic stats, symptomology. And now let's get to work. Let's go mm-hmm. work out. Let's look at your day-to-day habits. Like that's the focus. Take a few supplements, But I think these days, there's just way too much, like overcomplication, over-consuming of data, the nuance. Like, I can't even post about individual supplements without people nitpicking of like, well, you're promoting this phospholipid. What about this other phospholipid? Or this one doesn't sit well with me. They're nitpicking into oblivion, and they're mm-hmm. so fixated on that. And there's not the focus on the day-to-day behaviors that actually drive 90% plus of health outcomes. So it's a real issue, and I know we're all dealing with it across the board. And part of what makes it harder is, I think, one-on-one services. Like, why would somebody pay hundreds of dollars an hour, which then they tear you down for charging that much? You don't want to help people if you charge that much and whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's like, why would they do that when we all have access to AI? We all have access to Google. We all have access to all this free content. So why would somebody pay for that service? You know, they just want to consume the content. But at some point, you have to implement the knowledge, implement the content. You know, when people are not reaching their health goals, it's not a lack of information. It's a lack of integration, right?
Absolutely.
So there's a lot to all this.
Yeah. When people say knowledge is power, and I used to be one of those people, I actually don't think that's a full sentence. I think there's a semicolon there. And it's like, yeah, knowledge is absolutely power. But without application, it's not going to do a whole lot. It's like saying you're going to sign up for a marathon and buying all this stuff and then quite literally the day of just staying in bed. You have to actually apply an integrator. If you want to learn how to cook, you can't just buy all the ingredients and stare at it every day. And I think where, to your point, kind of you get people who come to you that are almost at this elevated echelon of intelligence. They've done a lot of their own work. And you get these clients where there's almost this level of, okay, then I have to go a couple steps deeper because they are, you know, they've up to snuff, they're paying a lot of money. And then you realize that so much of it is really just doing less or helping people get off the health ledge. And I'm like, listen, just because you read an article and it's good and there's some research doesn't mean it's good for you or that you need to add this in tomorrow. And I'm sure you get this too, where by the time people find you, they've spent thousands of dollars already. They've worked with other practitioners. They have a lot of answers. And so it is a lot of it just going back to the basics of like, let's just look at what's happening. And it's funny because when I was on your website, and I know FDN promotes a lot of functional labs and they're great, but sometimes that can be a self-fulfilling prophecy for people. And they say, see, I wasn't feeling good. And this lab said that. And I'm always like, we treat the person, not the paper. I'm like very big stickler on that. But the labs that you do have on your website besides your own, the, you know, the GI map, I believe it's the Dutch, and then you had, I think you had one more on there that I was like, and the organic acid. Yeah. And I was like, those are the three that I always tell people, if you're going to spend money on functional labs after we go over the basics, those are definitely it, which made me be really interested in the test that you developed. I would love to hear you talk a little bit more about that because mental health has kind of gotten this cheeky PR campaign and, you know, it's a lot deeper. And so I want to number one know, is the mental map, is that like a mnemonic of sorts for what that stands for? And then maybe just explaining some of the biomarkers, because I think now there's all these functional tests and it's like kind of like a supplement with a proprietary blend. You're like, mm-hmm. am I just getting a bunch of nothing or am I getting specific biomarkers that are going to actually give me information that I can then use to apply new skills?
Yeah, yeah. No, good questions, because, you know, part of it, there's more like the rationale behind all the things versus then part of what I don't like about being a business owner or an entrepreneur is like, well, at the end of the day, like you have to produce revenue, right? Mm-hmm. Like if it's not profitable, you know, it could just be a detriment, you know, to your life in general. So, you know, there's certain things, in conversion. And I wish it was as simple as like, okay, I could do what I want to do, help people the way I want to help them and not have to worry about the monetization and the conversion and whatever, because that gets really hairy, really, really fast. Because like, even with lab testing, like let's start from the top with, you really do not need lab testing to reach your health goals. You don't. Like, you know, how did we survive as a species for hundreds of thousands of years without supplements, without medications, without lab testing? Like, we do not need these things to be healthy, manage our health, or reach our health goals. But now we live in the age that we do. We have technology. We have all these cool things. But it is one of those, you know, in our thirst for more complicated technologies and science that it's entertaining, it's stimulating for us cognitively, but we're overlooking just the basic foundations that really drive outcomes, right? So testing is a complicated thing where I like objectivity, and something that I'm constantly preaching as practitioners, and I train practitioners, is, you know, we need to make sure that we're spending more time tracking physiology than chasing root causes, right? Because, you know, how many, like the quantity of mycotoxin coming out in your urine, or what bacteria or microbes or parasites was detected on a PCR single stool sample, or how many metals are coming out in your hair, that's not really clinically actionable. It doesn't tell us really anything about your physiological function, mm-hmm. right? You know, it's testing for the presence of something that could be harmful to you physiologically in a given specimen, urine, blood, stool, whatever. And it's like, but we have to make sure we're assessing and tracking the physiology. What are your organs doing? What are your cells actually doing physiologically and biochemically? So that way, as we're doing some kind of intervention, whether it's we're working on nutrition or mindset, or you're sitting in cold water every day, or you're, you know, doing psychedelics in the rainforest, or you're taking a bunch of medications, whatever intervention resonates with you, let's be objective and scientific with doing these micro experiments, right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, just an easy example, if you're trying to improve your glucose regulation, okay, let's make sure that we're looking at the glucose, the HbA1c and the insulin levels and glycomark and these different objective glucose parameters to see if the intervention, the berberine, the Ozempic, the diet, whatever it is actually objectively moving the needle in the direction that we want. And unfortunately, I see way too much like throwing spaghetti at the wall. Well, I got to do this genetic test and what SNP is causing all my issues, or well, this bug that showed up in the PCR GI map, you know, maybe that's the issue. So there's, you know, chasing the root causes and not really objectively tracking the physiology. And that's a huge issue. And even like with the mental map. So the mental map, MAP stands for microglial activation profile, because my research, which is a little bit different than my service to self-healers, but the research that I do is all about microglial activation. Like that is the focal point of my work as a researcher and educator. And that panel, that test actually started as a research panel because I was being contracted by a medical lab to essentially advance the science of cryptopyral disorder, which is kind of this very not well known, not very well researched thing, right? And we mm-hmm. still don't know. And you know, I'm slowly but surely kind of finding stuff with that. But I found it to be a really good clinical tool because essentially my goal with it was, first and foremost, what clinical biomarkers that we have commercially available, things that we can run on anybody, anywhere, other than New York and New Jersey, you know, biomarkers that we can use to objectively infer the likelihood of neuroinflammation, glial activation in the brain, and damage to the brain, right? That was the main priority. But a huge part of it is a well-rounded lab panel that's identifying root cause factors that might be contributing to mental health issues, which, gosh, I mean, that's a huge list. Like blood sugar issues can contribute to mental health issues, oxidative stress, inflammation, immune activation, nutrient status. So there's a lot of boxes to check there. And part of my strategy was, well, I don't want you to have to spend $3,000, $5,000, $10,000 on all of these experimental functional labs that lack clinical significance and validation, right? Like let's objectively identify, you know, this person, it might be like a metabolic issue. This person, it might be an infectious inflammatory issue. This person might be methylation or whatever. So there's all those factors. And so it's kind of a combination of like really good science, really good research, also really good branding, mm-hmm. right? You know, because part of it is what's going to hook that person in to then get them in front of you where they're listening and they're coherent and, you know, you earn their trust. So then you can get into their psyche to start trying to guide their psyche in a way that's going to help them accomplish like sovereign self-healing. So there's kind of a lot to it. and we can tease out more certainly.
Yeah, no, I love it because I think you describe it as, you know, and that the topic of mental illness having these common underlying themes. And I talk about this all the time, whether you're researching something, whether it's like an herb you think that you have to have, a supplement, you have a pathophysiology going on. I always tell people, look at mechanism of action and look at common denominators in those. So like, you know, right now, berberine and Ozempic is a big topic of conversation. And it's always like, okay, but those are compounds, yes, that work on certain pathways and certain enzymes and things like that in the body. It's not the only thing that exists in the pharmacological world or in the herbal world or whatever. So it's really important to look at those underlying themes and like, where are we seeing common denominators? And I like that your test really breaks it into very, very broad spectrum buckets that are, that's the umbrella. And then with that actual umbrella, you could go down different rabbit holes with that, because it maybe would seem overwhelming to somebody, but I think that actually helps put somebody on a course where they say, okay, yes, I have 8 things right now that are popping up on my test. This one's a level 2 and this one's a level 3. That's a future Brianna problem. And we'll come back to that later. But right now these two are off the roof. So I have to start here. And I think that probably helps people when they are again at the end of their health rope, sometimes wanting to just fit into a box and saying, I don't know what's going on with me. Just slap a label on me at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's so many factors to take into account, but clinical priority, right? You know, really, any clinician, doctor, practitioner, coach, you have to meet the client or patient where they're at and make sure that we are prioritizing what should be prioritized in general. And I try to kind of break down of like, what are the psychological priorities and the physiological? And that might not always really be the same thing. So we kind of have to keep a little bit of separation there. But obviously, you know, the clinical presentation, the symptomatology, that should then guide like what labs we're ordering. Like we shouldn't be, I've never understood, and I just don't really agree with the idea of you're going to run the same labs on everybody. Like, no, we have so many lab tests and biomarkers available and new biomarkers just keep coming out every day. So it's like, why would you run the same biomarkers or testing on everyone? It makes no sense. Like, the testing should be bio-individualized to the individual based on their clinical presentation to then identify like what are the physiological priorities here. If you have a, you know, fasted blood sugar of 180, you know, but a CRP of like 2, you know, I think the getting the blood sugar under control needs to be the top priority, right? And, you know, consumers are very impressionable, right? Because they get excited about an idea that might not be really relevant to them. So they might be chasing after MTHFR because Gary Brecka talked about it on Joe Rogan. So now that's what I'm fixated on but that's a form of self-entertainment that doesn't actually have relevance to what your clinical priority should be. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of part of the shortcoming of self-healing, of do it all yourself, DIY your own health. It's like, well, but you're not a practitioner. You're not a doctor. You're not a clinician. You don't know how this works. You're consuming things that you're excited about because it's interesting and it resonates, but that might not have anything to do with what you should really be focused on to optimize your health. And that's where, you know, practitioners will always be needed to help guide that.
No, absolutely. At the end of the day, people forget that it's a business. Health, supplements, nutraceuticals, it's all a business. People are either mm-hmm. selling a service or a product. And when you're selling anything, you want to hit an emotional pain point. And so, mm-hmm. you know, I just had 2 founders of a supplement company on called WeNatal, and we were talking, they do prenatal for men and women. And we were talking about this idea of, you know, freezing your eggs. It's a great idea. There's a lot of misinformation around it. And at the end of the day, it's a business. And with businesses, a lot of the times it's the idea of creating fear mindset around something or that you're lacking something. And so it's this salacious headline of, I heard one clip off of a reel for 15 seconds. And now I think I have to go down this research rabbit hole. So it's really nice to hear someone like you speak about still taking the time to be like, yeah, there is a time and a place to go down this rabbit hole and let's nerd out. But there's also time and a place to just get back to the basics and get your mental, you know, mindset in a good place and your brain and all of that. So I love that you just, I think you do a really beautiful job of balancing that while still maintaining, I think, a level of equanimity, but also objectivity, which can be really hard nowadays because everybody just wants that clickbait information and they want to make a topic that is going to, you know, get somebody to tweet back or, you know, kind of get that knee-jerk reaction. So hats off to you on that.
Yeah, I think that's where my background in like client-centered coaching psychology, I think I almost kind of like overlooked that skill set when I got into the more clinical world. And then I very quickly was like, actually, that sort of background and foundation of client-centered coaching psychology, because if we as coaches, practitioners, clinicians are really trying to help somebody, it really is all psychology driven. You have to meet them where they're at psychologically and help motivationally interview and motivate them in a certain direction that's really gonna serve them. And what they need is not always what they want. Sometimes you kind of have to sell them what they want to get their compliance and trust, and then redirecting them to what they really need. For example, like one of my long-term clients, she has pretty substantial OCD and some medical trauma from the past. And that's a bad combination. We could talk about that for hours. But with OCD, you know, as a mental health disorder, a very interesting one, it really latches on to things and will blow it up and make it much more severe than it really needs to be. And so part of what I think practitioners have to be careful of is not letting the client tempt you to go down the rabbit hole with them, mm-hmm. right? Because, you know, as practitioners, like, we love this stuff. So if a potential client is coming to us like, I want to see if I have MTHFR, it's very tempting. Like, yes, I will sell you the genetic test and we'll go down that path together. It'll be so fun. And it's like, but if we're trying to look out for their best interests, we have to kind of question them a little bit of, okay, so, but why do you want to do that genetic test? And if you do test positive for that gene that you're suspicious about, what would you do with that information? How does that change what you're trying to do with your health? Like, if you were positive, what actions would you do to then try to optimize it and fix it? And should we just do that now? And maybe we don't need to do that test, right? Like, we have to be very conscious of why are we doing what we're doing, right? Is this to actually drive positive health outcomes, or, you know, are we just kind of getting excited about certain notions, right?
I'm quite the opposite. I'm always like, I have people come to me all the time and they want to run a bunch of functional lab tests. And I'm like, no, we're doing a lot of intake forms and we're getting back to the basics. And then if we still don't have answers in 6 weeks, we'll run a couple of labs. So
yeah.
Reverse psychology, I guess, on some level.
I think that's what it needs to be. I've been playing around with the idea, and there's the altruistic side of it versus the objective business side of, like, I'm starting to consider maybe, like, these potential clients that want to work with me, they have to be working with one of my health coaches before mm-hmm. we do any labs with me at all. But the reality is, if I do that, I will have no business, because that's not what the people want, right? Yeah. So that's like, all right.
They're rocking a hard place. You're like, well, you got to give people what they want. But sometimes it's almost like, all right, you have to pass these prerequisite classes before you get into your master's degree. So you have to check off a couple of these boxes, and then we'll get you to have the test.
Yeah, they'll go find another practitioner that will sell them what they want. You know, that's how it works.
I know. I could talk to you all day. We didn't even get to nerd out about stuff. I definitely want to have you back on the podcast to go into some more neuroscience stuff. But I want to be respectful of your time. And I love to always just to end with a little bit of fun, rapid fire-ish questions. And then you can tell people how they can work with you and get those tests, whether you want to or not. So we'll get to that. But first, my personality, I can be a bit defiant. I like to be a little bit of a rule breaker sometimes. And I always tell people that, you know, your relationship with health is one of the most longstanding and complicated relationships you'll have, but the relationships, it's the principles, it's still the same, right? And so relationships take time. So is there a habit that you think people should break up with in the relationship of health, or maybe a health or fitness rule that you think more people should break?
Gosh, yeah. I think all the rules need to really be broken, because I feel like, you know, the health influencers, we keep making up new asinine rules that are overcomplicating everything. You know, I think really, I don't see any, like, I've said this for years, but I genuinely feel that healthy lifestyle foundations, especially nutrition and fitness, like those two, yes, stress management, yes, sleep hygiene, although there's only so much you can do to really optimize your bedtime routine. There's only so much you can do to mitigate stressors. But like the fuel that you're putting in your face and how you're moving your body, like I genuinely believe that good nutrition and fitness can solve at least 80, if not 90% of what we deal with in functional medicine with a lot of lab testing and supplements, right? Like, I really feel like if the nutrition and fitness and healthy lifestyle foundations were really there, we wouldn't really need functional medicine, you know, in general. Not always, there's exceptions, kind of debatable. But to me, I think the rule people need to break up with is this idea of it's something external, right? Like it's, or what's the root cause of the root cause of the root cause. If you're not eating high quality nutrition day in and day out, you're not getting quality sleep, you're not moving your body regularly, and you're being really honest with yourself, or, you know, there's a lot of unresolved, you know, psycho-emotional distress and stuff. I just don't see the point in going down these supplemental lab testing rabbit holes. Like, get the foundations in place first. And, you know, if you're still having issues after really diligently, deliberately putting the work into your health for honestly years, you know, then go digging. But to skip the foundations and go digging and freak yourself out and paralyze yourself, the paralysis by analysis, That's the behavior people need to break up with.
I love that. We love a good breakup. We're here for it. We support that. Okay. So I know that you actually, I believe you were training to be a Navy SEAL, which is, I mean, that's really badass of you. And then you had endured an injury, which I could imagine was just absolutely soul crushing. But I'm sure that there was a lot of lessons that, you know, you took from that. And I always joke with my mom, I'm like, can I get a lesson that's not in disguise for once? However, right, that, you know, you're going to have bad days, or, you know, kind of places where you get into these mindsets that you can't get out of. So is there kind of a mantra or a bumper sticker version that you have for when you're feeling stuck, or you're having one of those, you know, days that you just kind of can't get out of, or you got just soul crushing news and you're like, okay, I can't go on to a whole soliloquy right now, but there's maybe one thing I can write on a post-it note or something on my whiteboard. What do you kind of tell yourself or tell others?
Yeah, you know, really what's coming up is the turning your pain into your purpose. You know, I think suffering is inevitable for humans, right? I mean, I could talk about that for hours of just kind of my spiritual beliefs of, you know, suffering is inevitable, but finding meaning through the suffering and making meaning out of it, you know, that's part of the eudaimonic self-actualization process, right? I think most people are unconsciously just running on this hedonic hamster wheel of run from pain and fear, run towards, you know, pleasure, basically. And to break out of that unconsciousness and break into a more mindful, conscious way of living and trying to expand and evolve and become more self-actualized from a place of kind of higher understanding, if you will. And so it's interesting, like my 10-year anniversary of my suicide attempt is a few weeks away. So this has kind of been on my mind a little bit more of like, wow, 10 years. And even just seeing like the maturation and evolution of how I look at that phase of my life has changed so much. I think I used to be a little bit more of a bleeding heart, a little more melodramatic about it, more outspoken about it, because I wasn't over it yet. Whereas these days, I hardly feel the need to ever talk about it. But I almost have to remind myself of like, I was once there. I was once at such a low point that I wanted to take my life, and I tried to, right? Mm-hmm. So it has been that turning my pain into my purpose of like the fact that I almost killed myself 10 years ago, and now I've accomplished what I have and have kind of become this, you know, figure of, you know, functional mental health and everything. And that's what I did, is I turned that pain and suffering into purpose and passion of, you know, anything that I can do to try to help others not have to suffer from that same thing. And there's so much healing and growth that comes through that. I often say that my work is my medicine. And I mean that quite literally. Like, my work, my career, it's the dominant thing in my life. I don't do that much other than work and work out, to be honest. You know, it has become my purpose, and it started from a place of pain. So pain, turn your pain into your purpose is the punchline.
I love that. It's a really powerful message. I think especially sometimes the optics of when you see somebody in a position like you with your career and right, you look physically healthy, like all of that, someone would be, might say, oh, he doesn't understand it. He doesn't get it. So yeah. I love that you could share the vulnerability of that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the only reason I even share any of, you know, my past story anymore, is just that relatability and for people to see the personability and maybe realize, actually, I can empathize a little bit, because I think it's very tempting to cast judgment of, like, you know, I know I might look like a prototypical, like, white douchebag with muscles, but actually there's a little bit more, you know, to it. So I think it's powerful when we can, you know, share those real life experiences, and, you know, just opens up the dialogue, makes it less stigmatic. And then we can actually have some constructive conversation.
Absolutely. You look like you could fit right into New Jersey with the muscles and all the things. So if you ever want to come. Yeah. Okay. One last question, and then you can tell people where they can follow you, and it will all be in the show notes. But this podcast is about living your best life. So any piece of advice, whether that's love, career, health, financial, those are kind of always mindset, the buckets that I'm always kind of evaluating, that you would like to give your younger self or wish that you would have heard and actually, you know, acclimated into your life earlier on? Love, man. Health, fitness, wellness, anything?
Yeah, that's a tough one. You know, ultimately, I really feel like love is the only thing that makes life worth living, to be honest. I mean, and that might sound a little like cliche or woo-woo, but honestly, like the things that we do, the roles that we play, the masks that we wear, it's a lot of just we're entertaining ourselves while we're here, whether we really recognize it or not. But at the end of the day, like, you know, those genuine, sincere, heartfelt moments of love, and, mm-hmm. and love is infinite in its forms. It's the only thing that's really worth living. So a lot of, like, what I try to do with, you know, business and purpose and all these things is trying to structure a life that maximizes the amount of time that I can spend marinating in the rapture of love itself. Right. So, and that's a hard thing. You know, you have to hustle to build your sort of cocoon that then you can marinate in that love. But I wish, you know, going back to my younger self, I've always been very passionate and purpose driven. Since day one, I remember, like, PT school day one, I was like, I don't care about the numbers and money, because I know that if I focus on serving my clients to the best of my abilities, the numbers will take care of themselves. And while that's beautiful and altruistic, it's also very naive. And the reality is, if you're not making a paycheck and you're not able to afford yourself the life that you deserve, you will not be able to serve others to the highest capacity. So honestly, I wish I'd been a little bit more business savvy and maybe a little bit more money focused, because that affords you the ability to do more. You know, money is a resource, right? Like, if I could be a philanthropist, I would be, but I'm not that important. I don't have that much money. You know, yeah. It does take money to, So yeah, maybe not the answer I would have expected myself to ever say, but the truth of the matter is, in order to accomplish what I want to accomplish, it is going to take the financial resource to make that happen. So I wish I'd been a little bit more business smart earlier on. Passion is great. That's what gets you started. But at some point you do have to actually, you know, use the currency of money to make things happen.
Yeah, passion can't always pay the bills, unfortunately. I don't think that's an accepted form of credit for your mortgage company. But
unfortunately not.
Well, Brendan, it was so amazing to have you on the podcast. I would love to have you back, but please tell people where they can find you, follow you, order your tests, all the things. Let them know.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate you having me. Definitely maybe a different conversation that we had envisioned, but we can, you know, we can run it back, nerd out about neuroscience and everything. We'll get you on my podcast, which would be awesome. But I'm not hard to find. It's The Holistic Savage on Instagram. That's, you know, my main platform, and everything just kind of funnels from there. But the website's metabolicsolutionsllc.com, and you know, my social and websites and everything, they're all very integrated. So it's kind of hard to get too lost in it, but I try to put out some good stuff.
And you do, you succeed, but it will all be linked in the show notes, and I'm definitely going to have you back on, and I hope you have an amazing day. Thank you for your time.
Oh, thank you. It was really a pleasure. I'll look forward to the next one, my friend.
Ciao.